Have you spent years chasing something? Success, peace, happiness, only to realize it was never missing? This paradox sits at the heart of Zen, and it's why this ancient philosophy feels so startlingly relevant today. When Alan Watts published The Way of Zen in 1957, Western civilization was experiencing a profound identity crisis. Our familiar concepts of reality were dissolving, leaving many feeling unmoored. While Western thought offered little guidance for navigating this uncertainty, Zen had been comfortably at home in the void for 15 centuries. What makes Watts' work enduring isn't just its clarity, it's his insistence that Zen isn't an exotic import, but a mirror reflecting our own cultural blind spots. The book influenced everyone from the Beatles to Steve Jobs, not because it offered easy answers, but because it revealed how our relentless pursuit of improvement creates the very suffering we're trying to escape. Zen is a way of liberation, predominantly Chinese in character, valuing direct experience over abstract theory. Western minds struggle with this because we trust focused analytical thinking while dismissing intuitive understanding. Taoism, Zen's philosophical ancestor, offers something different. The Tao represents ultimate reality that can never be trapped in concepts. It operates through Wu Wei, often translated as non-action, but better understood as non-striving. Your mind works by itself, like peripheral vision that sees best when not looking directly. You breathe without thinking, walk without coordinating each muscle. This is Wu Wei in action. The Taoist masters advocated a special kind of stupidity, not vacant mindlessness, but a non-grasping quality. Chuangzu described it as being like a mirror that grasps nothing, refuses nothing, receives but does not keep. A drunk falls without injury because they don't tense up. They embody Wu Xin, no mind, not unconsciousness, but unself-consciousness, where the mind functions freely without a second mind judging and interfering. The true mind is no mind, working properly when it works as if not present, like eyes that see without seeing themselves. When Buddhism met Chinese civilization, Confucian humanism and Taoist ease transformed it into something practical. After 7 years of fruitless meditation and extreme asceticism, Gautama simply relaxed. Sitting under the Bo tree, seeing the morning star brought profound clarity, complete liberation from suffering's cycle. What did he discover? From Zen's perspective, the Buddha never said a word, despite volumes of teachings. His real message remained unspoken because words create the very illusion we're trying to escape. But he offered practical guidance through four noble truths. The first concerns dukkha, not that life is suffering, but that ordinary life attempts the impossible, like trying to see your own eyes or bite your own teeth. The second truth identifies the cause, trishna, clinging, and avidya, ignorance. We fail to recognize that subject and object are relational. When you pursue something, it retreats. This creates samsara, perpetuated by karma, conditioned action reinforcing itself. The third truth concerns nirvana, the cessation of self-grasping. Seen from one side, it appears as despair. From the other, it bursts into joy. Nirvana arises naturally when the impossibility of self-grasping is thoroughly understood. Mahayana Buddhism confronted a paradox. Trying to let go is itself grasping. The effort creates the problem it seeks to solve. The Bodhisattva ideal embodies this, one who renounces nirvana until all beings attain it. Yet if nirvana is the cessation of grasping, it cannot be grasped. If there's no separate self, no being can attain it. The insight: we are already in nirvana. Seeking it is like searching for glasses you're wearing. Nagarjuna's doctrine of the void breaks this cycle. His dialectic reveals the relativity of all propositions. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. The world doesn't vanish upon awakening. Form is void just as it is. The everyday world needs no escape, only different seeing. Even delusion is bodhi, awakening. The difference between ordinary and awakened isn't easily defined. The ordinary person only appears natural, while true naturalness feels unnatural to them. Zen's distinctiveness lies in its directness. While other Buddhist schools treat awakening as remote, requiring lifetimes of effort, Zen presents it as immediate, something that could occur at any moment. The difficulty lies precisely in its simplicity. Around 520, Bodhidharma demonstrated this approach. When Emperor Wu asked what merit he had gained from promoting Buddhism, Bodhidharma replied, "No merit whatever." Asked about Buddhism's first principle, "It's just empty. There's nothing sacred." Asked who he was, "I don't know." When Hui Ko approached seeking peace of mind, Bodhidharma replied, "Bring out your mind here before me, and I will pacify it." Hui Ko responded, "But when I seek my own mind, I cannot find it." Bodhidharma snapped, "There, I have pacified your mind." This became the characteristic Zen method, the question and answer aimed at precipitating sudden realization. You must see the point immediately or not at all. Later, illiterate peasant Huineng revolutionized Zen further, countering the chief monk's gradual purification poem with, "Fundamentally, not one thing exists, so where is the dust to cling? Instead of purifying the mind, simply let it go, because the mind is nothing to be grasped. Thoughts should come and go freely, like birds through the sky, leaving no trace." The ancient Zen poem declares, "The perfect way is without difficulty, save that it avoids picking and choosing." Pursuing good over evil is fundamentally misguided. These opposites arise mutually and cannot exist without each other. Success demands more success. Eating leads only to more hunger. Comfort exists only against discomfort, like an image visible only against a contrasting background. Our sense of isolation stems from separating ourselves from our minds. We feel victimized because we think we were involuntarily given a sensitive organism. But Zen asks, who is it that has this mind? There is no myself apart from the mind-body that structures experience. When we stop identifying with our idea of ourselves, we discover that I have no other self than the totality of things of which I am aware. Watch your breath and you feel both I breathe and it breathes me. Far Eastern cultures prize spontaneity and naturalness, that unmistakable tone of sincerity in uncontrolled action. The mind cannot be split, for, like a sword that cuts, but cannot cut itself. The marvelous quality of spontaneous action isn't superhuman magic, but perfect humanness without contrivance. A Zen monk wept at a relative's death, and when criticized, replied, "Don't be stupid. I'm weeping because I want to weep." As Yunmin said, "In walking, just walk. In sitting, just sit. Above all, don't wobble." Natural sincerity comes from the undivided mind, not because you try to be natural, but because you are completely unified in that moment. Zen's radical premise, you are already complete, already whole, already home. Formal practices aren't means to an end, they're expressions of realization itself. Lighting a cigarette with total presence becomes ritualistic. Washing dishes fully engaged becomes meditation. The ordinary person is already a Buddha. The question is whether you recognize it. This doesn't mean abandoning practice. The Rinzai tradition uses koans, paradoxical questions like, what is the sound of one hand clapping? These aren't intellectual puzzles, but spiritual challenges forcing you beyond conceptual thinking. Students wrestle with them until suddenly the ice collapses. The question becomes transparently absurd. Zen's expression in arts, calligraphy, painting, poetry, tea ceremony, archery, provides direct understanding. Sumi-e painting requires unhesitating, dance-like movements. Haiku poems evoke rather than explain. Training follows Zen's core principle, practicing relentlessly, without trying, resolving the paradox of intentional non-intention. Every human activity can become meditation, not by making it special, but by being fully present to what already is. Stop seeking what you already are. In this very moment, with all its ordinariness and imperfection, you are already living the awakened life.